Our team at Social Impact Solutions, when we're talking about impact, we're talking about the true change that an organization is creating. We see this term overused, misused, misunderstood very, very often. And so we're talking about the change that your programs are creating, the measurable change that your organization is creating over time. This can be for the environment. This can be for animals. It can be at the community level, the individual level. You can measure impact for education organizations, for an arts and culture organization, for even community foundations can measure their impact.
Welcome to the Social Impact Solutions podcast, where we help mission-driven leaders measure and market their social impact so they can raise more money and do more good. I'm Lauren.
And I'm John Mark. Together, we bring you expert insights, practical strategies, and real-world stories to help you create more meaningful and measurable change. This podcast is designed for purpose-driven leaders. So let's dive in, explore what's possible, and take your mission to the next level.
Hello, everyone. My name is Lauren Vanderpool. I'm here with John Mark. We are co-founders of Social Impact Solutions, and we're really excited to talk about some really critical pieces for nonprofit leaders today. John Mark and I and our team have had around 200 conversations, one-on-one conversations with nonprofit leaders over the last few months. And key questions have continued to arise or resurface. And so we want to talk about some of those key questions today to really help you with fundraising, marketing, and impact measurement efforts. So key points that we'll be talking about today will be engaging new donors. How do you engage? How do you find new donors? Key fundraising activities, especially if you're a small development or fundraising team. Key marketing activities, also for small marketing teams. Communicating your impact effectively and how to or should you diversify your donor base. So with that, would love to turn it over to John Mark to talk about how to engage new donors.
Absolutely. Lauren, thank you so much for the intro. And we're really excited to get to share a lot of these insights from these one-on-one conversations that we've had with nonprofit leaders over the last 90 days. So I want you to imagine a scenario, right? The scenario is you have 50 individuals attend a spring event who have never given to your organization. So we call these prospective funders. You have 50 prospective funders. And we need to ask ourselves, as months go by, as time goes by, how do we best engage those leads or those prospective funders throughout the year? And so let's imagine that 7 months has lapsed from this event, and you have to ask yourself a handful of questions. How have we communicated with these individuals over the past 7 months? How often have we communicated with these individuals over the past 7 months? And have we appropriately introduced them to the mission our nonprofit seeks to create, the mission that we have? And do we feel like they are well associated with our team and with our programs? And so when we're thinking about how do we engage with prospective funders, it's important to have context around how we've already engaged with them with regard to donor development outreach efforts, with regard to digital marketing efforts, et cetera. And so when we're thinking about how do we best engage prospective donors with hopes that they become active donors, we want to be sure that we're doing a handful of things very, very well. First thing, we want to be clear on reiterating the purpose of your mission, whether you're going to do phone outreach, text message outreach, email outreach, whatever. We want to be sure that we are reiterating the purpose of your nonprofit, the mission of your nonprofit, and that we are expressing sincere appreciation for their engagement, even though they haven't given yet, right? They attended an event, they've been in your email series or whatever context that may be. We want to express sincere appreciation. Now, we also want to make the purpose, the opportunity, and the ask of whatever campaign you're working on extremely, extremely clear. We do not want to confuse anyone, and we have notes on how you can be extraordinarily clear later on. Other things that we want to do is we want to share 1 to 3 stories. We want to have multiple touch points with these individuals. And something that we love to encourage nonprofits to do is hosting donor celebration or just community-wide celebration events so people can get more and more engaged. We find that organizations that have, let's just say, habits and consistent methods of engaging with donors in a live or in-person setting do a lot better than those that do not. And so those will be the main points that we want to talk about when it comes to engaging new donors, but a few ways that we can drill down on this even more. When we are actually making the ask, We want to make it very clear why and how their contributions matter. Like, what kind of difference is their organization going to create? And we do that by communicating impact and change. We want to help these prospective funders understand the measurable change you have created over the past 6 to 24 months. And we want to share testimonials from your program. Stories of transformation are extraordinarily important. The two main drivers for giving, in case you do not know, is the impact that your nonprofit creates, as well as the stories of transformation that your nonprofit tells. But something else that's often overlooked is not sharing testimonials from other donors. This is something that can be extremely important to encourage prospective donors to become active donors. And we always want to lead with genuine gratitude and appreciation. Now, we could take this a lot further. We could get a lot more into the weeds on how we do segmentation, on how we do communication outreach. We could break your list into active donors, lapsed donors, donors that have only given $500, donors that have given over $10,000. There's a lot of ways to break this apart. What's important to understand is that we do not want to talk to everyone as if they're exactly the same, right? We want to talk to people where they are. This obviously takes a lot more time. And so if you have the resources to do so, we strongly recommend that you do that. Now, those are really good ways to engage with prospective donors to turn them into active donors. What Lauren's about to talk about is extremely important. The top three activities your development team should focus on.
Awesome. Great information on engaging new donors, John Mark. Thank you. But again, these are key questions that John Mark and I and our team have heard over and over and over again, definitely in the last 3 months, but really all year, with a lot of one-on-one conversations that we have with development officers, marketing individuals, programs individuals, board members, nonprofit founders. And so that's why we're covering these core questions today. So a lot of times we hear that we're a small development team, we're a small fundraising team, you know, we're 1, 2, maybe 3 people. What are the top activities? What are the key pieces we should be focusing on? Whether that's for a specific campaign, Giving Tuesday, end of year. And so if we go to the next slide, then we will see that these individuals should be focusing on, and honestly, even if you're a larger fundraising team, these are still really, really critical pieces. So first ask yourself and your team, are we focusing on ideal funders? We talk to a lot of different types and sizes of nonprofits, and it's very common for small to mid-size organizations to be focusing on getting funding from individual donors, from grants and foundations, from corporate partners, from events and other types of fundraising efforts. And if you're a team of 1 to 3 people, really, even if you're a team of 5 people, this is spreading your team really, really thin. It's very challenging. I would say potentially even impossible to do all of this well. You might have 1 or 2 areas that you're really excelling in, and the rest of it is just kind of, you know, menial or moderate amounts of funding that are coming in. And so determine who your ideal funders are, focus there, and put your efforts in those areas, especially if you're a small to mid-size organization. The second key question to ask yourself and your team is, are we emphasizing and reporting, clearly communicating impact and gratitude? Impact being the real change that your organization creates. Are you making that clear in your phone conversations, in your emails, on your website, in text messages, at fundraising events? Are you making the impact of the organization clear? Are you articulating that well? And are you being, you know, are you expressing honesty, integrity, gratitude, and appreciation to, again, existing donors, lapsed donors, prospective donors? These are key pieces that really engage funders and other stakeholders with your mission. Taking a multi-channel approach and having, you know, consistent follow-up is also really key. We talk to a lot of organizations and ask them what their, you know, donor touch points look like throughout the year. And oftentimes we hear, well, we send out a monthly email or we send out a quarterly email and that's it. And I understand that a lot of nonprofits have small teams, limited bandwidth, but if you're not communicating with donors throughout the year, and really you're only communicating when you have an ask or when a fundraising campaign is going on, those donors are not being nurtured. They don't feel like this is relational. They feel like it's very transactional. And so using a multi-channel approach through text, through a one-to-one email, through a phone call, through a newsletter-style email, social media. It's a great way to keep people informed. They might not even open an email, but they see your name in their inbox, and that's just a good reminder. You know, they might not answer your phone call or your text message, but still, being consistent with your outreach styles and your follow-up is really, really key. And that leads us into the last question here. Are you blocking enough time to contact multiple funders multiple times? And so again, none of us, you know, check every email in our inbox. None of us respond. I shouldn't say none of us. Most of us don't respond to every text message. And so following up, even when you're not hearing from back from these donors. Key action steps would be to keep things high level. You're really close to your mission, so don't get too into the weeds. You know, keep it high level in email, in phone calls, even in-person meetings, and then get into the details when a donor is asking about something specific. Get into the details with the things they seem to care about, but keep it high level otherwise. Focusing on measurable change, the impact that's being created, communicating that is really key. We say this a lot, but we see it overlooked far too often. So really, not just helping people to understand the number of people you serve, but what change is happening? Why is your program needed? What's the overarching problem that you're solving? And what change have you already created? What change will their investment or their partnership help you create in the future? And then last but not least, having a clear call to action, again, whether this is in a conversation, whether it's in a speech or a presentation at an event, whether it's in an email, clear calls to action are really key. We see a lot of organizations that don't really have a clear ask. It's a vague, you know, call to action, or there's multiple calls to action with multiple campaign options, multiple, you know, monthly recurring versus one-time donations. Really try to avoid that and have one clear call to action with whatever campaign or whatever season is going on with and at your organization. But point being, existing funders, prospective funders, they want to partner with your organization. They want to invest in your mission. They don't want to just give $10, $20, $1,000 to something that is fleeting. And so really make this authentic connection, make it relational, and be really consistent and genuine is our best form of advice. So we've covered two of the key questions that we have heard so often this year. Would love to turn it back over to John Mark to talk about another question that we've heard a lot. What are the top marketing activities that a marketing and communications team should be focused on?
Lauren, that was a wonderful, wonderful overview. I appreciate you going through that. So what are the top three activities your marketing team should focus on? Before we get into that, I think it's important to put yourself in your donor's shoes. Right? So do you open every single email that hits your inbox? Do you answer every phone call every time it rings? Do you read every text message? Do you make a donation on the spot without asking any questions? So of course, the answer to all of these questions is absolutely no. And we want to assume that same view when we're speaking with our donors or our prospective funders. So before we get into some of these action steps, it's really important to understand, put yourself in your donor's shoes, understand how you may be coming across. But it's also important to understand that people's inboxes, your donors' inboxes, phone calls, voicemails, everything is absolutely inundated 24/7, 365 days of the year. And so the most effective thing that we can do is we can cut through the noise with clarity. We want to know that, or we need to remind ourselves that confusion is the enemy of our fundraising success. And there's a framework out there called the Problem Plan Solution Framework. We would love for you to use the Problem Plan Solution Framework when it comes to how do you communicate about your nonprofit. It's a very, very important framework to use. And this framework is not ours. We're not claiming this framework is a social impact solutions framework. But we're going to use a hypothetical nonprofit here where their problem statement is, there's 72,000 adults with intellectual disabilities in our area who will likely outlive their caregivers, right? That is a very powerful problem statement for anyone that knows someone who's an adult with intellectual disabilities and their caregivers. Like, that is an unbelievable problem that a lot of caregivers and individuals with disabilities experience, and they think about it all of the time. It's a huge problem. The plan that this organization has, so again, we're just using a fictitious organization here. The plan is we partner with housing providers and secure government support to create stable, long-term housing. Okay, good. I understand what this is. What's most important is that this is a clear plan to a very big problem. The solution statement, though, is ensuring loved ones are safe, supported, and cared for life, right? So we would put all of that together into two sentences. There are 72,000 adults with intellectual disabilities in our area who will outlive their caregivers. We partner with housing providers and secure government support to create stable, long-term housing, ensuring that loved ones are safe, supported, and have care for life. So the key action step here is be hyper clear with your messaging. Do not be confusing. Confusion is the enemy of your fundraising success. Next thing that we want to do is we always want to lead with gratitude. We want to check your tone, make sure that your tone is coming across as grateful. And we want to lean into the impact that your nonprofit creates. And we want to invite our prospective and our existing funders to co-create that impact with us when they give, when they partner with us, and when they give. The next thing that we want to do is we really want to define the funding need. And this is just a quick way to think about how do we make it very clear what the gaps are in our fundraising, what we need to do. And it's not about you meeting your budget. It's not about you meeting your fundraising goal. It's about you raising enough money to go out there and solve a big problem like this problem right here. There's 72,000 adults with intellectual disabilities in our area who will outlive their caregivers. So this is how we can start to talk about the gaps, how we can really define why it's really important that we take action now, and how we can be extremely clear in our messaging. The next thing that we need to be is extremely consistent, right? We want to use multiple channels when it comes to having conversations, whether that's email, SMS, phone calls, videos, or in-person meetings. Online, you know, whether it's a webinar or some type of meeting, is really important. On average, you're going to need about 15 to 25 touch points per prospective donor to turn them into an active donor. And I know that is a sobering thing to hear. That's a lot of work. And so we want to be sure that we're leveraging technology to make this easier, but that we are leading with gratitude and we are leading with impact, because that will ultimately be the thing that encourages donors to give most. And so think about putting yourself in your donor's shoes with all of your communication. Cut through the noise with clarity by following the problem plan solution framework, and then follow these other key action steps to take your organization to the next level. But with that, I want to pass it back to Lauren.
Great. Thanks so much, John Mark. I know we're covering a lot in a quick amount of time, but it's all good content that we know is relevant, as we have heard over and over again over the last few weeks and months and really throughout the course of the year. So our next question here that comes up very often is, how can we communicate our impact most effectively? And I will start by saying you really can't communicate your impact if you're not measuring it. So we won't take the time to really hash through all the ins and outs of impact measurement today. We've done past webinars on this. We'll do future webinars and podcasts and conversations. But definitely, you know, go to our website, sign up for a call with our team if you're looking to measure your impact and really struggling to do that. So let's start with, what is nonprofit impact? Our team at Social Impact Solutions, when we're talking about impact, we're talking about the true change that an organization is creating. We see this term overused, misused, misunderstood very, very often. And so we're talking about the change that your programs are creating, the measurable change that your organization is creating over time. This can be for people. This can be for the environment. This can be for animals. It can be at the community level, the individual level. You can measure impact for education organizations, for an arts and culture organization, for even community foundations can measure their impact. Health and human services. There's really not an area where you can't measure impact. Some organizations or program styles are easier than others, but a really great kind of foundational piece is to really aim to have a baseline measure to see where people are at before your program or before they experience your intervention, and then where are they at midway through the program or ideally at the end of the program, to be able to measure baseline and post-program, compare the two. What has changed? Has there been an improvement in their knowledge base, in their test scores, in their lab values, in their health outcomes? Has there been a reduction in homelessness? Has there been a reduction in violence or recidivism? There are so many different things that can be measured, and there's not necessarily one right way to measure impact for a given program or organization. There are plenty of ways that are quote unquote wrong or just ineffective ways of measuring impact that we see all the time, that it's not really worth the time and effort. But this is a good starting point. This is our definition of nonprofit impact. So next here, we know that this is challenging to do. We know that it's difficult for a lot of organizations to measure their impact. Therefore, it's difficult, nearly impossible to communicate that impact. But we also know that the number one reason for giving is directly related to the impact or the change that an organization creates. So whether you're looking to get funding from a major donor, a granting organization, a private foundation, younger generations, they all care a lot about the impact, the outcomes, the change that an organization is creating. And that's why we find it so important to measure the impact, not just to report back to funders, but also to report back internally and determine where are the gaps, what can we improve upon, and what's working well. So this next slide is just an example of how you can begin to communicate the social return on investment, or the SROI, within your organization. These are real numbers here that we have pulled, but it's just an example. Not all industries, not all organizations can go out and find estimated SROI numbers, but many can, whether that's with nutrition, healthcare, education, definitely workforce development. But this here is saying that education initiatives in underserved communities in the U.S., studies show that for every $1 invested, there's a return, or a social return, SROI, of $4 to $16 in economic and social value. And so what this ultimately is saying is that for every $1 invested, that's going to be at least quadrupled, if not increased by 16 times. So $4 to $16 is a large range, but the more specific your program is, if you start to narrow down demographics, geographic region, you can narrow that range. But this is really saying to, you know, if you're putting this in a grant application, this is letting that funder know that this is a worthwhile investment. This is something that they would want to fund. They want to see growth. They want to see long-term change and sustainability. And this is something that is going to do that. So key action steps here for if you're looking to really determine how do we communicate our impact better is A, start measuring that. And there's a lot to that we are not covering on this slide or in this conversation. But once you have some data, definitely pull stories as well. So we're huge on data and evidence-based approaches, absolutely. But stories and impact metrics paired together is where this can be the most effective and really stand out from a communication standpoint. So stories, data with heart, pairing stats with individual connection. Again, going back to what I said earlier, really comparing before and after contrasts. This can incorporate metrics and stories. So, you know, what did someone's life look like before your program? And then what does it look like after your program? You can use statistics, you can use metrics, you can use, you know, test or assessment results, as well as interviews and stories to do that, compare and contrast. And then last, but I would say potentially most importantly, you know, you're not just talking about past results, but you're also painting a picture, setting the stage for a future, more scalable vision for these funders as well. So highlight past results so they have a lot of trust established in your programs, but also paint a picture for future growth and scalability that they're partnering in, that they're investing in as well. Impact measurement is critically important for many reasons, and reporting back to funders is one of those. But to me, that's not the most important reason. The most important reason is to really align a lot, if not all, of your stakeholders together so that you can better serve your beneficiaries, so that you can see where your program gaps are and improve those areas. That's what this is all about, right? Is doing a better job for the people and communities that you serve. So when it comes to impact, your employees, your volunteers, donors, board members, partners, beneficiaries, they all care about the impact and the change that your organization is creating. And so it might feel cumbersome. It might feel challenging to measure your impact through individual programs, but it is absolutely worth the effort for so many reasons. And this unifying component is one of those massive reasons to do that. So I will turn it back over to John Mark here, and he's going to talk about the question we get a lot is, how do you diversify your donor base? But he's going to talk about, first and foremost, should you diversify your donor base?
Well, that was such a wonderful overview of the most important feature of nonprofits being the social impact that they create. But something that we've seen, it's the most effective way to grow your nonprofit from a fundraising perspective as well. It's the most important thing because it's all about the people or cause that you serve. And so the more you measure your impact, the greater the impact can become. But what's amazing is that the social impact your nonprofit creates is the number one driver for giving, and it makes fundraising so much easier. And so I love that you were able to articulate that, and I appreciate you sharing your insights on that. The second thing that we see that really, really helps nonprofits grow is actually focusing on ideal funders. And so we are going to ask the question, should you diversify your donor base? We actually hear this all the time. And it's unfortunate because there's this huge myth in the nonprofit industry. And it's a myth that's preventing organizations from actually growing. I think it's one of the most pernicious myths that's out there, and it's holding so many organizations back. And that myth is, you should diversify your donor base. I'm sure many of you have heard this phrase before. You need to diversify your donor base. Sometimes you hear grantors in their responses. If they've denied your organization funding, they say you're not diversified enough. And there's a lot of confusion around this. There's a lot of confusion on, like, what does it mean to diversify your donor base? And so the advice that we're going to give today is for organizations that are trying to grow. These are for organizations that are doing less than $50 million a year in revenue. It's for organizations that are actually trying to grow. And the truth of the matter is, what most people think when they hear diversify their donor base, they think that they need to have a percentage of funding that's grants, a percentage of funding that comes, and let's say these are federal grants, percentage of funding that comes from family foundations, another percentage of funding that comes from corporate sponsors, and then another percent from individual funding. And the problem with this is, This is not an effective strategy for actually growing, or let's just say increasing your fundraising revenue for a nonprofit, because it doesn't take into account something that are called donor acquisition costs. And I know this is a phrase that not a lot of people like. Some people are offended by the phrase donor acquisition costs. I do not have any positive or negative association with the phrase. It is simply a metric. It is a fundraising metric. And what are your donor acquisition costs? And let's just define what that means real quick. Donor acquisition cost is the amount of money that you spend to convert a stranger into a funder. And that stranger could be a granting organization, that stranger could be a federal funder, that stranger could be an individual donor that gives $20 a month, right? It can be any of those things. But it costs money to acquire all types of donors of varying degrees, right? That money is spent in the form of team time, whether you are marketing towards individual donors, let's say you're putting on an event, you know, so a gala. Let's say you have development officers who are making phone calls, or it's writing grants. That money can be spent in the form of software, like a CRM and other tech platforms. And that money can obviously be spent as advertising, like paid ads through Facebook or through direct mail. The cost of postage, the cost of all of those things, all marketing costs need to be rolled into, marketing and development costs need to be rolled into your donor acquisition cost. But what's important to understand is that while it costs money to acquire all types of donors, not all donors are the right fit for your organization, and not all donors are going to return enough money to be worth that investment. Now, I want to be clear. This does not mean that we are not grateful for and that we're not crazy about your donors. It just means not all types of funders are the right fit for your nonprofit. And we define funder fit being aligned with your mission, interested in and capable of funding your growth goals, not just your budget, right? Not just your fundraising goal for the year, but your growth goals over time. And they also need to be easy to find and connect with. So those things and many others have to be true. So think about donor acquisition costs as the amount of money that you spend to acquire a new donor. But the problem is not all donors are the right fit for your organization. So we see a lot of nonprofits spending tons of money or just big percentages of money of their actual marketing development budget to acquire donors who are not going to generate enough revenue for your organization to be quote unquote worth it. And so when you see the phrase diversification, I see this all the time on LinkedIn and it drives me crazy. I want you to see, when you see donor diversification, think of that as a defensive strategy for big nonprofits to not get smaller, right? That's how we stop losing money. That's how we prevent shrinking our organization. So an example there would be an organization that is heavily, heavily reliant on federal funding. Let's say they're doing more than $40, $50 million a year. 95% of their federal fund of their funding comes from federal funding, and then federal funding budgets get cut. So it's a little bit riskier for them because they're like, ooh, we just lost some funding. We might need to go diversify somewhere else. And ideally, they're diversifying through the same marketing channel, which would be grant writing. So they're going after other grants, corporate grants, family foundation grants, state contracts instead of federal contracts. Ideally, they're not trying to do something completely new, like, hey, we need to start putting on galas, right? That's a huge pivot. That's a very, very different fundraising organization. What I want you to think about instead of playing defense, if you're trying to grow, right? If you're actually trying to grow, you're not going to grow by playing defense. You're going to grow by playing offense. And concentration is what leads to growth. Concentration is offense for growing nonprofits. And this is not our opinion alone, right? This is absolutely the best advice you see in the business world when it comes to private equity and venture capital companies. This is how they grow companies really quickly, is by focusing on one customer type. And the same math applies for nonprofits trying to grow by focusing on one donor type. But there was a study that was done in 2007 by a wonderful consulting firm called Bridgebank Group based out of Boston. They're a great organization. But they replicated this study again in 2024. So originally did the study in 2007. They came back and looked at the data again in 2024. And they found that 90% of nonprofits that went from $0 a year to over $50 million a year did so by focusing on one type of funder. That means they were not diversified in the sense that most nonprofits use the phrase donor diversification. They were actually heavily concentrated. And so look how different this chart is compared to the one we showed just a moment ago. This is corporate sponsor one, corporate sponsor two, three, four, five, six, all the way around to corporate sponsor 20. And this is what concentrated fundraising looks like with regard to your donor mix. You've concentrated on getting more and more and more corporate sponsors rather than diversifying from corporate sponsors to federal funding to foundation funding to individual donors to monthly recurring campaign to all of these different strategies that do not add up and lead to actual fundraising growth. And so concentration of one donor type is the most reliable way to increase your fundraising, to scale your fundraising organization. And it's really important that we reorient all of our marketing and development efforts to concentrate on one type of funder until you achieve what's called scale. You're doing more than $50 million a year. And so some key points to include in this kind of strategy is you want to identify your most promising funders, decide how you're going to contact them, and then you want to really articulate the size of the problem your organization seeks to solve, show how you're solving this problem. You want to talk about how these funds are going to be used, but you want to focus on the impact that your organization seeks to create, right? We spend a lot of time talking about this on our fundraising course, How to Identify Your Ideal Funders. If you would like access to that course, you can just go to socialimpactsolutions.com and you will see that pop up at the very top. You have a courses tab. You click on that, how to find your ideal funders. That is the best way to be able to access that course and do all of this very effectively. It's a very robust 3-hour course that you will enjoy a lot. The next thing that you want to do is reorient your marketing and development strategy to attract, convert, and retain ideal funders. That's what you want to do. That is what growth looks like. That is how you scale a nonprofit's fundraising capabilities. And that includes donor communication for your phone call scripts, email scripts, end of year appeals, direct mail, online donation pages, impact reports, and everything else. And so you really, really do want to double down on attracting, converting, and retaining ideal funders, because that is the most effective way to scale fundraising from a mechanistic standpoint. But nothing unlocks funding like the impact that your nonprofit creates. So Lauren, I'd love to pass it back to you as we talk through these final questions.
Wonderful. Thanks, Jean-Marc. I know that we recently did a webinar on a similar topic, covered a few other pieces there too, and lots of great questions came up in that conversation and would love to hash through some of these as well. So question one, how do I engage with new donors on social media, especially to supplement or support development team efforts? It's a good question, and Jean-Marc and I both believe that marketing and fundraising teams should be working together, be supporting each other's efforts. Oftentimes we see that those teams are very siloed and really not coordinating or corresponding with each other all that much. And so my response here for question one would be to have a really consistent message that your marketing team and your fundraising team are using. Would absolutely, you know, be fine with a lot of the same content being replicated and repeated. Just because someone saw something once doesn't mean they're going to remember it. And other experts in marketing say that marketing is an effort in memorization. And that is true. So seeing really similar pieces, maybe even the exact same pieces of information multiple times is not a bad thing. Another thing here that I think can be helpful is strategically choosing hashtags and getting in front of new donors that may have never heard about your organization. By strategically choosing those hashtags, you know, what are they looking at? What are they scrolling through? What are they interested in that has something to do with your mission? While at the same time, I believe that for most, not all, but for most organizations, social media is a much better reminder touch point with existing donors or maybe warm leads who haven't given to you yet. It's not as much an approach for like brand new cold leads converting to donors. That's not always true, but I would say more often than not. But would love to hear your addition to that as well, Jean-Marc.
No, I think that's a great answer. So like, how do you engage with new donors on social media? Or how do you engage with prospective donors on social media? It's a lot of what we've already said, but leading with impact, telling people what difference are they going to make when they give to your organization or when they partner with your organization. Talk about the actual outcomes that your programs create. Talk about the difference. Tell stories of transformation. Tell donor testimonials. Tell reasons why people volunteer with your organization. You just want to make it really, really clear what difference, what change your nonprofit creates through your programs. And you think about marketing and development, especially with social media, like exactly what Lauren said. It's a great way to cast a really, really big net and see who comes in, right? It's sort of like net fishing. You throw out this huge net. You're not going to catch, you know, you're not going to max out your net every single day, but you're going to pull something in. You'll be like, oh, cool. Look what we have in here. And so we have this opportunity to share more and more good news about the change your nonprofit's creating. That's something I do want to add as well. You have an opportunity to sort of be a light in the dark, you know, when it comes to, there's lots of bad news out there. There's a lot of negativity on social media. It's amazing the outrage that you see on social media. And this gives you an opportunity to stand out and gives you the opportunity to be more clear and to really showcase the difference that your nonprofit creates and that your donors create when they give and as they give to your organization. But I really, really love that question. I think it's a really good one.
It is. It's a great question. I really like the next question. How do I address cost of living increases with our donor base? We are a community nonprofit and every donation makes a difference. And so this is a great question. It's super relevant to just 2025 as a year. And I think it's a great idea to be authentic, transparent. And so whether it's cost of living or other realities, if you feel like it's relevant to your audience, I think it's worth addressing or at least touching on. And with this topic of cost of living, I think this is going to make donors feel heard, respected, and just acknowledged rather than glossing over that and simply just asking for donations like you would any other end of year campaign. I also think it's relevant to highlight how cost of living increases have affected your organization as well. And so not to overlook or overshadow what the individual donors are experiencing, but also to help them understand that we are experiencing this at the organizational level too. But John Mark, I know that you have a lot to add here that is a little bit of a different perspective than what I just shared as well.
Well, I think what you're saying is absolutely true. I think it's 100% important. So how do you address cost of living increases with your donor base? Number one, it's important to know who your donor base actually is, right? Because there are a lot of people, the vast majority of people, that are adversely affected by cost of living increases. And so it's really important to be empathetic and to address those costs of living. And Lauren, I love what you just said on, you know, how is it affecting your program participants as well, right? It's a big deal. Cost of living has gone through the roof. At the same time, some organizations, their donor base is chock full of extraordinarily wealthy people that have not been adversely affected by cost of living increases. And so you don't want to project what you may be experiencing or what your team may be experiencing onto people who aren't experiencing the same things. There is an unbelievable amount of wealth that has been created around the world, but we're going to talk about the United States over the last 20 years. Like, it is a mind-bogglingly increase in wealth. And so some people are not feeling the cost of living increases like others. And so it's important to know, who are we actually talking to? Are we talking individuals who cost of living has adversely affected? Or are we talking to people who it hasn't? And so just being very clean and clear and empathetic with whomever you may be speaking to, I think, is really important.
Yeah. All right. Next question here. Having trouble getting volunteers for events. Do you have any suggestions on how to boost volunteer activity? John Mark, I'll pass this one over to you.
Yeah, so I'm having trouble getting volunteers for events. I think a lot of times we can look at two things. One, what are the incentives for volunteers to actually show up, right? And are we attracting, converting, and retaining enough volunteers to sustain our volunteer program, right? We'll put it in that regard. A lot of times organizations do not realize that volunteers churn the same way like donors churn. It's just a fact of life. Volunteers stop volunteering with your organization. They might stop volunteering altogether, or they might start volunteering somewhere else. And that's okay. That's just a normal fact of life. And so sometimes we need to look at the incentive, like what's in it for them to actually come and volunteer. But we also need to see, do we have enough new volunteers coming into our program to continue this program that we have? And so we might have more of a volunteer recruiting problem than we actually have a volunteer activity problem. But both can be true too. We might need to fix the incentives and we might need to fix the recruiting problem at the same time. And so thinking about ways to boost volunteer activity, I would just think about incentives. What's in it for the volunteers? You can do things as silly as, you know, if you're dealing with college age volunteers, it's t-shirts and pizza, right? If that's what we're talking about, that is a tried and true method. It will probably continue to be a tried and true method, but there are other ways as well. Like, how do we actually do volunteer recognition events? How do we do different things? How do we communicate the impact that volunteers are creating through our programs? I think this number is accurate. It's plus or minus $3, but I think the average volunteer hour in the United States is worth around $27, which is a big deal. So every hour that a volunteer is giving you is worth at least $27, right? And some kind of social value, which I think is important to consider. But Lauren, I'd love to hear your thoughts on that too.
Yeah, no, I think it's all great, great insights for getting volunteers engaged. And I would circle back to a lot of what we said about donors, you know, expressing a lot of gratitude, highlighting the impact or the change that volunteers are helping you create. I have volunteered in a variety of capacities, and I will be honest, there were typically points in, you know, not all, but some of those volunteer engagements that I sat back and asked myself, why, you know, why am I doing this? Why am I committing to this? Because I was working more than full time. I was in a doctoral program, and, you know, I was also volunteering with an organization, had, you know, other responsibilities and just life too. And so just remembering that people are busy. They have work, they have school, they have families, they have unexpected life events that happen. And sometimes volunteers and donors are treated as, you know, with just so much expectation and not a lot of appreciation. And I think when you flip that and you genuinely appreciate them, then they're much more likely to want to show up and be there. But clearly communicating to them that they're valued, they're appreciated, and that their contributions, their time, is actually making and creating change and helping them understand what that change is. How are they moving the needle? Why does it matter for that particular program or for your organization as a whole? Next question here is about SMS or text and how effective it is. Is it, you know, helpful for donors? Is it bothersome to donors? I would say that text is still very effective. That's not my opinion. I'm actually personally not a huge texter, but there are lots of marketing stats and studies that show that email and text are still very, very effective. So email, text, it's a great way to communicate. You can automate these things through most donor CRMs now. It's typically not too expensive. I would say don't overdo it. Definitely be brief and authentic in your conversation and your touch points while at the same time being consistent, providing updates, sharing stories, thank you messages. Definitely don't always include an ask. But what else would you add to that for text-based communication, John Mark?
I think that's so good. I think that's such a good answer. The big advantage with text messaging is it has an extraordinarily high open rate. And so text messages are going to have very, very high open, or we'll just call them seen rates. Like, oh, I saw that text message from XYZ nonprofit. That doesn't mean they're going to take action though, right? We all get a lot of spam text messages nowadays. And so you want to lead, repeating ourselves here, with gratitude, with impact metrics, sharing stories of transformation. We want to follow these same playbooks. And again, put yourself in your donor's shoes. Would you want to receive the text messages that your nonprofit is sending out? Are you one of those organizations that sends 14 text messages on Giving Tuesday and no other day of the year, right? We want to be able to take that relationship seriously and steward that relationship really, really well. That's a great way to avoid aggravating donors with SMS. But Lauren, I think this next question is so dialed in for you. How do you like to articulate the impact of your programs, even if most of the metrics that you have are qualitative and not quantitative?
It's a really good question. We get this fairly often, I would say, and I think there's a lot of confusion around qualitative versus quantitative. And a lot of people think that the qualitative pieces maybe can't be used. And so qualitative being more stories, interviews, if you do focus groups, or if you have like a long form, if you have a survey with an open-ended question, all of that would be qualitative. Quantitative being more a numeric or scaled questions. And so both are super valuable. Nearly every research study that I've done at an academic level or, you know, a publishable research level has been mixed methods, meaning that it incorporates qualitative and quantitative. So even for research purposes, both of these are really important. And qualitative results, stories, testimonials, interviews, focus groups can be, you can go through and code and theme those results in a way that actually gives you some numeric count. It gives you a way to quantify what you have in your qualitative results. So that is more of a research approach. It's more time consuming. I would definitely advise that someone that's experienced go about that process. If your team isn't, you know, doesn't know how to do that, doesn't have the time to do that, doesn't have, you know, software, then I would advise talking to a team like ours or another impact evaluation team that could help you with that. And then this is not the most effective, but it's an option, is to go through and kind of do a sentiment analysis. If you have 20 interviews, 30 interviews that you've done, AI can help with this. A lot of it is not super effective or accurate. So I do, you know, want to caution with that. But also a huge piece is you can pull stories from this qualitative information, or at least testimonials if it's not a full story. You can redact people's name. You don't have to use any identifying information, and you have some strong stories to pull from the qualitative, and then you can pair that with the quantitative metrics as well. So it's a good question. But definitely don't throw out your qualitative information. It's really, really valuable. And then the next follow-up question, how can I best use visuals to share impact? It depends on, you know, what information you have and where are you trying to share that? Are you trying to share it in a video? Are you trying to share it in an email? Are you trying to share it on your website or an impact report? But I typically like to use tables, graphs, and charts to really just make the information very scannable and understandable and digestible. Pie charts, bar graphs are all really great. Infographic, if you have a lot of information, an infographic can be a really engaging way to share a lot of information. And then just little design touches here and there. So breaking up text with photos or breaking up text with, you know, this was our pre-program percentage, this was our post-program result. You can just have one of your graphic designers change that up and break up the text and really highlight some of the key findings. But would love to hear your thoughts on how to make impact reports or impact reporting more visual as well.
Yeah, I really love what you were saying, though, about just comparing pre-program to post-program intervention, because, you know, the impact that your nonprofit creates is the most important feature of your organization. And so the better you can communicate that impact, the better you're able to scale your programs, the better you're able to scale your fundraising. It's truly the most important thing that you can do. So charts, graphs, tables, infographics, there's so many different ways to approach it from the standpoint of, you know, what is the size of the problem that you seek to solve? And then where, what's sort of your piece of that pie? And then what's the gap, right? This is where we're going. And this being our program is how we believe we're going to get here. And here's the evidence that our program works. That's really what we're talking about. Here's the evidence that our program works. So we're taking that to donors of all types saying, here's our evidence, but here's the size of the problem. If you fund us, we'll make progress in actually solving that problem. And so you can do this with videos. You can do this with, you know, charts, designs. There's lots of different ways to be able to articulate that. But I do think it's a very, very important, and that we could probably talk about that all day long if we let ourselves.
Yeah, definitely. No, they're really great questions. All right, last question here. How do I find new donors? I think we've covered a lot of this in the conversation today. I would absolutely say circle back to what John Mark was talking about with donor diversification versus concentration. And so find new ideal donors. So determine who your ideal donor or ideal funder is first. And then that should be a really good guide as to how and where you're going to find these donors after you know more specifically who they are. And I say donors, I should say funders, because it's not always an individual. Your ideal funder might be corporate partners. It might be grants. I don't know. But what would you add to that question?
You know, what you're saying is exactly right. Like, that's the first step. Who is actually your ideal funder? You know, and it takes time to be able to figure that out. It takes analysis to be able to figure that out. But then you want to know, where are they, right? Where are they hanging out? Where are these people and how do I get in front of them? You know, if it's a granting organization, you write more grants. You know, if it's a corporate sponsor, there's a lot of different outreach efforts that you can do to be able to get in front of them. If it's individual donors, you've got to determine, like, what is the most viable path for me to get in front of more of these types of folks? And so that can take many different forms. It can take speaking engagements. It can take Facebook ads. It can take grant writing. It can take speaking at events. It can take so many different forms. But what matters is that you get really good at that form and that you don't start mixing all your forms all at once, right? Especially as you grow. You want to have one, maybe two pathways that lead to the growth that you really want. And trust me, we've been down this path. We've done it the wrong ways. We've worked with organizations that we've helped them sort of right the ship. And it's amazing how quickly organizations can grow when they know their pathway to attract, convert, and retain ideal funders. Because there are organizations out there that can attract and convert really, really well that can't retain. We see that a lot. We see other organizations that can retain all day long, but are not consistent at attracting and converting. And so we have to be able to know, what part of this pipeline do we need to solve? Like, where are people falling off? Are we not getting enough people into our organization? Or are we not keeping people as donors in our organization? Do we have retention issues or conversion issues or attraction issues? And so this is why marketing and development are so important for nonprofits who are trying to grow, is because it's not a one-size-fits-all approach. You need to find what's right for your organization, and then you need to throttle down and increase your fundraising if you want to grow. If you're not interested in growing, you can take it easy, do whatever you want to do. But if you want to grow, it takes an unbelievable amount of energy, effort, and resources to be able to accomplish these goals. So these were a really fun, like, sort of pool of seven questions to get to go through here, Lauren. I loved your answers and super grateful for the individuals that we got to speak with and get to chat with that inspired this conversation.
Absolutely. I agree. It was a great conversation. Great conversations that we've had with many nonprofit leaders that led to these slides and this conversation between you and me. So I hope it was helpful for our audience and everyone that's listening.
Cool. Well, thank you so much for your time, Lauren. And thank you so much for everyone who's listening. Have a wonderful rest of your day and happy fundraising, and go make more impact. Thank you.
Thanks so much.